This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. North Carolina is setting the pace for new breweries. There are now more than 100 breweries and more than 10,000 industry jobs across the state. And any time you head to a bar or the bottle shop, there are probably a dozen new labels. A state once associated with moonshine has gone legit since we popped the cap in 2005, increasing the legal alcohol volume in beer. North Carolinians have been swimming in new and exotic libations. Here to chat about the revolution is the executive director of the North Carolina Craft Brewers Guild, Margot Knight Metzger. Margot, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. Glad to be with you.
Also with us to talk about the continuing growth of the brewing industry is Jeff Tiberi, WNC reporter, who has reported on this. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing well. Margot, tell us how North Carolina got to be such a big player in the brewing industry.
Well, it really all goes back to this Pop the Cap movement. And in 2006, we had about 25 breweries who were operating and making beer under that 6% level. But when the cap was popped, it really just created this massive amount of growth. So we've gone from about 25 breweries to 120 just since 2006.
Just getting to the high-gravity beer was all the difference. And, of course, North Carolina was a little late to the game, obviously. Portland is sort of the city we think of, but other cities had been doing this for a while. But North Carolina really caught up fast, didn't it?
Oh, yes. And North Carolina is developing a national reputation. You know, people say they think about Portland. They also think about Asheville. They're starting to think about cities in the Triangle, all over North Carolina, and looking at North Carolina really as a progressive state for beer, particularly in the South. We do have more breweries and brew pubs than any other southern state. So we're starting to have that national reputation, not only for number of breweries, but for quality, for creativity, and it's been a lot of fun to watch it grow.
We're going to talk a little later in the program to a brew pub owner in Wilmington. Asheville, I think, it's something like the highest number per capita of breweries, the city with the highest number per capita, right?
That's right. With only 100,000 citizens and 25 breweries probably, yes, they are doing very well in that category.
All right. So, Jeff, you've been doing some reporting on this. High-gravity beer, being able to produce high-gravity beer is important. But what else created and why is it that North Carolina has gained its reputation so quickly?
I think one of the things that's helped in the last couple of years is that, you know, you have these smaller micro pubs, very small breweries that are not canning or bottling. You might not even be able to get a keg for a party or an event. You can go in and you can try what they have on tap. And sometimes if you go in on a Friday and that's what's fresh on tap, it's gone by the next Wednesday or Thursday. Some pretty small operations. Then there are, you know, I guess I would describe it as the medium-sized folks, the foothills of Winston-Salem, the Full Steam, the Natty Greens, you know, folks that are bottling. You might see them at the minor league ballpark. You can get them in the Trader Joe's or the Harris Teeter. And the third wave have been some of the big boys in craft beer. So we've got New Belgium, Oscar Blues, and Sierra Nevada. So Oscar Blues is, I think it's about the 20th biggest craft brewer in the country. Feel free to jump in at any point if you've got better numbers than I do, Margo. They are up and running in Brevard, and you know they're canning there, and they have had tremendous growth since they have pushed forward and created this East Coast arm. Sierra Nevada started bottling earlier this year, and they're going to have a canning line up in Mills River, which is right outside of Asheville. And logistically, this is a great spot for these brewers because it's within – Asheville is within 1,000 miles of Boston, Chicago, Dallas, and Miami. So that's a day's haul. And what the brewers have said to me is, you know, we can get fresher beer to new markets quicker – and we can introduce our product into new markets where it hasn't been available. So the logistics is part of it. That saves money. It obviously can – their thought is that it can expand the brand. So now we've got some of the best-known craft beer that is coming right out of North Carolina with this kind of East Coast arm. New Belgium broke ground earlier this year. They're going to have a production facility and a tasting room. I think eventually a restaurant as well, right on the French Broad River in West Asheville. So it's kind of the scope of this is ranging from small to pretty big and well-known breweries.
It's one thing to be a point on a map that's close to those very big markets, but I guess you need good transportation out of there as well to make it actually practical to get the beer to those markets, right?
Sure. And to your point, point, in Mills River where Sierra Nevada is, I think it's within 3 or 4 miles of Interstate 40, an airport as well as rail. So very quickly, they can get whatever, however much needs to be shipped on its way and moving pretty quickly, which is important.
And there are plans even to improve or expand anyway the surface roads in that area as well.
That one of the plans is to go from four to six lanes, which would, in theory, just make that even easier and better.
All right. So in terms of an industry, in terms of economy, it sounds like a good thing. Now, is there a saturation point, Margo? Is there a point at which a city like Asheville just can't take another brewery?
Well, I think it's not just the residents of Asheville that are supporting that beer economy. The tourism component of this is extremely important, not just for Asheville, but for North Carolina in general. We have seen a real uptick in people who make plans for traveling based on what kind of beer is available. And with the addition of these expansion breweries, these, you know, iconic craft beer brands to the Asheville market, you've got people who want to make a pilgrimage. You know, this, I think we really have the opportunity to be sort of a Southern beer mecca, perhaps even an East Coast beer mecca, because, you know, it's been, so maybe you couldn't go visit New Belgium or Sierra Nevada. You couldn't go all the way to Colorado or California. But when you take those and you add to the mix all those great existing breweries in North Carolina, people really want to come see what it's all about. And already, I mean, this is from 2012 data. This is before Sierra Nevada, before New Belgium broke ground, right when Oscar Blues was coming on the scene. We're talking about $800 million annually in economic impact from craft beer in the state.
For the whole state of North Carolina. Well, therein lies a bit of a paradox. I would think that it is the goal of a brewer, even if you're doing craft brews, to pick up national distribution. But then the whole tourism, you can only get it in Asheville or Wilmington.
There's got to be a mix. There has to be a mix. There is plenty of room to grow in the craft beer market, just to put it in perspective. I know it feels like craft beer is absolutely everywhere and that everybody's drinking it. But the reality is that it's only 8% of the total beer market in this country. So there is plenty of room to grow. Not every new brewery can take over the world. And as Jeff said, there are plenty who are satisfied to be a neighborhood pub and to really just specialize in serving their neighborhood. And there are others who do plan to grow and be a regional or national brand. I would certainly like to see us home grow the next national brand. You know, we've got Sierra, we've got New Belgium, Oscar Blues moving here, which is a wonderful compliment, but I would like to see us grow our, you know, maybe it'll be Highland, maybe it'll be Foothills, Natty Greens, who knows.
We are talking about the craft brew industry in North Carolina today on The State of Things. With me is Jeff DeBeery, WUNC reporter, and Margo Knight-Metzger, who's executive director of the North Carolina Craft Brewers Guild. What does it take then to get national distribution?
Well, there are a couple of issues at play here in North Carolina that are challenging when it comes to letting our small brewers flourish and grow into something big. So in states like California, Colorado, you see extremely low excise tax on beer to the tune of 8 or 10 cents a gallon, whereas in North Carolina it's 62 cents a gallon, which is, well, to put it in perspective, the gas tax is 37 cents a gallon.
Excise tax is one of the two or three highest in the country, is it not?
Well, we actually rank eighth.
Okay.
We rank eighth.
Is that a tax? Tell me about that, though. Forgive my ignorance about what an excise tax is. Does that mean once it leaves the state, or is that just the tax on retail?
Yeah, that is on the sale of the beer paid by the distributor, which is very often the brewery itself can be its own self-distributor, but only up to 25,000 barrels. So once a brewery grows to a certain size and is really starting to be successful, when they hit 25,000 barrels and one, all 25,001 barrels are legally required to then go through a third-party wholesaler. And that's about a 30% cut right off the top of their profits. So it's an artificial cap. We really believe that the market should dictate that the time at which a brewery decides to work with a wholesaler. Most of them do it, you know, early on, and it's a challenge. So I just, as an example, Sierra Nevada and New Belgium both came from states where they had unlimited self-distribution and very, very low excise tax. And that enabled them to really, really grow and flourish to be able to then open up another.
You know, those taxes pay for those roads that help them get their beer to those bigger markets and the good water that helps them make the fine beer that they made.
Oh, well, you know, it's not as if breweries don't pay lots of other taxes. There's just a there is an excise tax burden. They already pay a federal excise tax and they also pay a state excise tax, which are designed to basically punish them. So it's
or spread the rewards across the entire state. There's another way to look at it. But I get your point. I take your point that they are a factor in determining the size and the distribution. So whether or not you go national, all those things, that is a factor clearly in determining that. And that's certainly a fair statement. And then sort of how it's used. Jeff, around the state, I mean, we've been talking about Asheville. There's a lot going on here in the Triangle and certainly in Wilmington. We're going to hear more about that. You got about 30 seconds. Can you give us a sense of the distribution of these breweries around the state and where the economies are or overall what it means to the state of North Carolina?
There are pockets everywhere. I mean, the money that Sierra Nevada has put in, I think it's $100 million. I mean, there are pockets everywhere from Asheville to Kinston, Wilmington, even on the Outer Banks in the northeast corner of the state. So the urban areas as well as some of the rural areas. And it's continuing to grow rapidly in all of these areas.
We are talking about the brewing industry in the state of North Carolina. Jeff Tabiri has been reporting on the craft brewing industry. Thank you for being with us, Jeff.
Thank you.
Margo Knight-Metzger is executive director of the North Carolina Craft Brewers Guild. She'll stay with me as we continue our conversation on craft brews and brewing in North Carolina. That conversation on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay with us.
Fought you for all that I'll forgive, and I'll drink strong ale as long as I live. Oh, good ale, you are my darling.
This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, today joined by North Carolina's Craft Brewers Guild, and Executive Director Margo Knight-Metzger is with us. Beer is a $100 million market, and as of 2013, craft brewers have carved out 8%, as Margo told us earlier. So in a state like North Carolina, which quickly became a big player in the game, it only makes sense that people are looking to get into the business. Programs have started that teach students how to work in the beer industry. A couple of educators from Western North Carolina have helped establish these programs. They're joining me now. Scott Adams is director of the Craft Brewer Institute at Asheville-Buncombe Tech Community College. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Thank you for having me today.
Seth Cohen is director of Fermentation Sciences at Appalachian State University in Boone. Hello, Seth.
Thanks as well for having me.
I just had a couple before the show started, so my talking isn't as good as it used to be. Seth, let's talk about you. ASU with its this explicit directive to develop, implement, and foster the fermentation science degree program. What sort of careers are you preparing students for?
Our students are the trajectory is kind of intended to be fairly broad. As a four-year institute, our academic program's obviously charged with the mission of being, a permanent academic program to change with any adjustments in career fields and opportunities. So, primarily students are interested in a lot of the craft beverage industries, wine production, brewing, distillation, craft beverages such as like kombucha and other types of fermented products that are coming into the market now. Aside from that, really a focus on kind of STEM disciplines of science, technology, engineering, mathematics. We are kind of the oldest form of biochemistry and biotechnology. So a lot of our scientific advancements really came out of discoveries in the fermentation industry. And it's, kind of been something that we've brought back here, at least at Appalachia, in terms of getting students engaged in some of these pretty high-paced scientific career fields, as well as obviously a lot of these areas that are really booming in terms of economic and business development in areas such as ours.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about that, because if you think about beer as a craft, you would think you'd go to a brewmeister and you would learn your craft from others, a kind of a like any other trade, you'd learn it that way. So when you think about a four-year program and ask, well, why? I think maybe you put your finger on it. The idea that there is this science and there's a kind of communication between the scientists, the chemists, and the marketers and retailers and the producers. Is that how you see yourself sort of positioned as someone who not only takes it from top to bottom in terms of the industry, but also helps people communicate with each other as they build an infrastructure in the state of North Carolina and anywhere.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you're right. It's a big part of our focus to make sure that our students, regardless of their personal interest, be it chemistry, microbiology, biochemistry, or business, can contribute to a small, medium, or large-sized business. So, what we often discuss is, training scientists to speak the language of a business person, so that they can speak on the same table and that they can communicate effectively. The big push now is it's one thing to open up a brewery or winery, but it's another thing to be open in 10 years. And the secret to that, I think, really is having quality employees and staff and producers that understand how to, respond to production issues, to respond to market changes, and to make a consistent and quality product. So I think that's nationally and internationally, I think that's where these industries are, is really just, we have businesses now, it's sustaining those businesses, and it's really hard to make choices from a production standpoint if you don't know what the input is into your choice-making decisions. And, that's where the science really comes in, is instead of troubleshooting by trial and error, you're troubleshooting by your knowledge base.
Well, Scott Adams at Asheville Buncombe Tech, tell us about your program and how the two-year program works, and what's the emphasis?
Well, here at AB Tech, we have a lot of wonderful opportunities. One of them is actually working with Dr. Cohen up at Appalachian State. AB Tech is very proud to have the first 2+2 agreement with his program. So we do have students that are interested in Dr. Cohen's larger science-based program that are able to come to AB Tech and then transfer to Appalachian into that amazing program that he has there. That's one route. But we also have the Brewing, Distillation, and Fermentation Associate of Applied Science degree. We're very proud to have that. We were part of the team that developed that within the state. There are three schools within the state offering it, each one offering a specific concentration within that degree. Here at AB Tech, ours is Brewing Production, Marketing, and Management. And we're looking at a two-year program of introducing students to a very hands-on application to the brewing industry from both the brewing perspective as well as understanding the distribution and management from a tasting room and from a product line.
Well, Margo, when I think about college, I think about that as a great place to teach consumers. They're part of the bargain. So consumers have learned a lot about beer. What about it? Does it really help the industry to have universities, technical community, and community colleges involved in this?
Absolutely. And it's been great to see the support from universities, not only for wine growing and fermentation science, but also, other horticulture related to hops, the growing of wheat and barley for, it's both education and research based, and it's a true testament to the growth and excitement of this industry that our universities are saying, how can we help? And as it grows, there's a risk of shortage of qualified people who really have those skills and scientific understanding as well as the practical knowledge to work in a brewery. So we're delighted to see these programs in the western part of the state, and they're also popping up in other regions as well.
Well, Seth mentioned earlier the fact that keeping the brew pub open for 10 years is an important part of this. How big a part does consistency in terms of quality play, and do the colleges and universities play any part in that, in developing a real reputation as a state that does beer?
Well, I think quality is critical, to answer the first question. That is something that we as a guild take very seriously. A lot of the, there have been people brewing beer in North Carolina for 20 plus years who have done a great job with quality, and we want to make sure that all the newcomers share that as absolutely paramount to the success of our industry. And so as a guild, we try to partner up with these universities to make sure we're spreading that knowledge. We're having our very first North Carolina Craft Brewers Conference in a couple of weeks in Greensboro, and we'll have participation from community colleges, universities. We do educational seminars every quarter and have worked with both ASU, AB Tech, NC State, et cetera, to make sure that what they know gets passed on to our members.
Seth and Scott, I'll ask you the same question in a minute, but I'll start with you, Seth. I mean, it's one thing to say, look, there should be some baseline knowledge. We want to make sure there's some consistency across the board. So let's create programs at our universities, at our colleges, and at our community colleges. On the other hand, you know, the big complaint for a long time in this country was there was kind of one beer and they had two or three different labels. But, you know, can you also promote the kind of creativity that the craft industry has really been the hallmark of, and still have these kind of, you know, and have it come out of a university? Seth?
Yeah, I mean, I think absolutely. And I think, you know, that's a good point. A lot of the traditional research and innovation has come from private industry and business, and traditionally, for good reason, they've been pretty protective of those as kind of trade secrets. So, you know, there's not a lot of sense in sharing all your private personal accomplishments within a large business like that with your competitors. You know, as these smaller businesses come up and look at new products and different products and reintroducing really traditional styles of different types of beers, lagers, ales, and learning how to work with new ingredients, whether it be rye from North Carolina compared to rye from the Midwest or from the UK, you know, how do you make the transition from one area to the other, changing ingredients, and really just the research basis and the ability for breweries to have in-house knowledge of how to deal with ingredients and coming up with new recipes. I mean, you know, as a brewer, especially as a small to medium-sized brewery, you know, it's fine to play around with ingredients, but the last thing you want to do is dump 10, 30-barrel tanks on the ground because it didn't come out right. You need it to, you know, work consistently the first time. So, you know, absolutely, with in terms of product development and innovation, you know, I think all of us on the line here and in your studio are really supportive of the fact that, you know, North Carolina in specific really has the potential to be kind of the hub in the Southeast, you know, if not across the U.S., and really driving kind of an area where you can come and learn and experience a lot of this aspect of the industry, education on many levels, as well as consumer education. So I think, you know, there's no doubt that supporting research and education in this area is really what draws the consumer knowledge and the producer knowledge and kind of ties it all together.
Well, Scott, I'll let you answer that if you have anything else to say and you want to comment on it. But I guess the other thought that occurs to me is who's coming to these programs, because it is very popular. So you can imagine a lot of people say, yeah, I want to be a brewmeister. I mean, are you having to turn people away? Are other people coming to you, do you think, Scott, for the wrong reasons in some ways?
We've had a really great opportunity to talk to a wonderful group of students. We have two cohorts that have started our program at AB Tech. We take 24 students a year into the program. The first cohort that came in are an amazing group of students. The vast majority of them already have four-year degrees and are coming back, and some of them even master's degrees, and they're coming back to learn specific skill sets. These students are very interested in what they're doing. They want to get into the industry. We allow and teach our students a lot of different styles as we present beer. They'll take everything from a craft beer class all the way through advanced brewing and then even to a seasonal beer class. So we're looking at many different styles, many opportunities to try a lot of things. But I'm very lucky that AB Tech has taken it so seriously in the Asheville area in our creation of the Craft Beverage Institute of the Southeast. We're looking at a bigger picture, even requiring all our students, even the beer-centric students, to take. They make wine, they make ciders. It's a bigger picture and understanding the beverage industry and where we're moving in the future, both for economics for North Carolina and for their own futures in the industry.
Well, we're talking about the future of the brewing industry today on the State of Things, and training and education, of course, doesn't stop or start at the schools. A new Rocky Mount Brew Mill is looking to create a new chapter in the craft brew industry here, and here to talk about that brew mill and the incubation stations created to help homebrewers as well as small brewers take the next step is Head Brewmaster Sebastian Wolfram. Sebastian, welcome to the program.
Hi, Frank.
Tell us what's going on at Rocky Mount. What is the Rocky Mount Brew Mill?
So, in very short, the Rocky Mount Brew Mill is essentially a project to establish a craft beer community in Rocky Mount, and the person behind this is Capital Broadcasting, that about a year ago had two gentlemen come in and pitch the idea They own this beautiful real estate at Rocky Mount and since 2007, and really were waiting for kind of the right idea to kind of, you know, help this in a community redevelopment approach. And so the craft beer really seemed to make sense.
So this is an old textile mill in Rocky
Mount? That's correct. It's the old Rocky Mount Mills right on the Tar River. It's about 70 acres with houses where the workers used to live.
And so Capital Broadcasting that developed American Tobacco, where we're sitting now, so you got a pretty good track record of figuring out how to take these old mills and turn them into something.
Right, that's correct. They've taken, you know, the inspiration from, you know, how community basically was established in downtown Durham to Rocky Mount. And again, craft beer seemed to make sense. And so the idea really is to kind of help the growth of the industry. And, you know, as we just heard, you know, there's a need for education. There's a need for, you know, making startups potentially a little bit easier and allowing people to focus on running their business. And so the lessons that have been learned here at the American Tobacco with the Underground, which is this tech incubator, have sort of resonated in some sense really well with the craft beer industry to essentially come on board with these with this young industry and say, you know, we'll take the dive with you essentially, and you know, in all these small sort of young industries, the idea really is to kind of be along for the ride and, you know, do the high fives when they're appropriate, and also, you know, take the hits. And I think the industry is really all about this. It's a very collaboratively open.
But it is a manufacturing industry, and I think what's interesting about it is you've got tech incubators here, but if you got a laptop and a pretty good brain, you can kind of work things through, and especially if you're surrounded by other good thinkers. But there's a big capital investment when it comes to beer making. So as I understand it, you're going to have all of that capital there, all the stuff you need to make, which is a barrier to entry, as the economists like to say. So with all that there, I can come lease space, try out my recipes, and if I'm any good, maybe get a loan and go off on my own.
Yeah, so the setup is essentially to allow an incubation and brewing. You need the upfront setup of you know, getting the building prep for heavy water use essentially, and then getting the equipment set up and really providing infrastructure, and then advice essentially. And so it's not just that there'll be brewing spaces with a brewery in it that people can come and lease. It's about 2-year terms is the initial setup. But also that Nash Community College is opening the brewing distilling fermentation program, as we just heard, similar to Nashville, up as part of the campus, and so that's sort of built in, and so people as they come in and start up, they can get the education they need, and they can expand on that and get ready to then start their own big brewery and get financing with proof of concept. I mean, all these things are basically provided in the incubator.
That's really, and Scott Adams at AB Tech Community College, tell us about the demographics of brewing right now, because we're looking at barriers to entry, in other words, how costly it is. If community colleges get involved and you have incubators, I mean, right now for women and minorities, what's the landscape like for the brewing industry, and is that changing if it's not too good at the moment?
Well, like you know, all education institutions, our goal is to serve everybody in every community, and we at AB Tech take that very, very seriously. Right now, you know, you get a lot of comments that, you know, not joking but serious, brewing's a lot of white guys with beards, and that's one of the things that people talk about. But you know what? It is a continually growing. We're seeing a greater number of people coming involved from the minority communities, but particularly women. And here in Asheville, we have a very large interest for a lot of the women in the industry. Our program, both cohorts, 2 years in a row, we have 20% of our cohort being women, and they are some of our strongest students. They are well-educated. They are very interested in this, and they really are marching forward. I think you're going to see these students, particularly in our first two cohorts, these women are going to march forward and be a great part of the future of North Carolina brewing.
I'll talk to women's, all women's female managed and owned brewery here in the Triangle in just a minute. But Margo, I want to talk with you about whether that landscape is changing at all and whether anything is happening in North Carolina to improve things for, we're hearing, women and minorities in terms of getting into the business.
There are more women than you might notice at first blush. You know, I can think of several who have women either owners or in high-level leadership levels. They might be scientists in the lab, but we still have a lot of work to do. I believe that the input from women is critical in growing this industry. They have, you know, so much to offer, and we're really trying to foster that through our guild and make sure, you know, that we're creating an opportunity for women to have equal status in brewing. You know, we don't have beards, but we have a lot of great ideas and really good palates.
Seth, I've only got about 30 seconds left, but I guess the fact that STEM is so important to this, and now we're seeing more women moving into science, this could be an attractive way to bring at least women into the business.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree more. It's a very big draw into the sciences, and you know, I think it's the best thing we can do as a community is to help, you know, promote these programs and get exposure so people from some of these communities that aren't well represented understand these opportunities exist, because it really is a huge demographic that really isn't, you know, being well portrayed in the industry. So to me, that's a really, really large business opportunity, especially for some of these smaller communities that aren't, you know, keeping up with this kind of current growth in these industries. So, yeah, I think it's a great opportunity and a time for people who are interested in science-based careers.
We'll talk more about it on The State of Things. That's Seth Cohen, Director of Fermentation Sciences at Appalachian State. Thank you, Seth. Also, Scott Adams is Director of the Craft Brewer Institute at Asheville-Buncombe Tech Community College. I want to thank both of you. Just ahead, Margo and Sebastian will continue our conversation as we talk the business of beer on The State of Things. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Today, talking about the craft brewing industry in North Carolina. I'm joined by North Carolina Craft Brewers Guild Executive Director Margo Knight-Metzger, as well as head brewmaster at the forthcoming Rocky Mountain Brew Mill, Sebastian Wolfram. We've been talking about the craft industry around the state, the impact on the economy. Let's talk to a couple of people who do the work. And we'll start with the winner of the prestigious Gold Award at the World Beer Cup, Kevin Kozak. Kevin's been a brewmaster at Wilmington's Front Street Brewery for the past 8 years and broke himself loose to come with us and be on the show. Kevin, welcome. Good to have you
here. Great to be here, Frank.
Also with us is the co-owner of Bombshell Brewery, North Carolina's first and only 100% female-owned microbrewery. That's right here in the Triangle. Hello, Ellen. Ellen,
join.
Nice.
Hi,
to
Frank.
Have you. Ellen, we've been talking about women in this industry and whether or not there are any barriers. I mean, was it how did the idea for you to make the all-women brewery come about? When did that happen?
Well, my one of my co-partners and I were avid beer drinkers, and we were golfers, and anytime we couldn't golf on a Saturday because it would rain, we would go out and hit brewery tours. And one day she said, "Why aren't we doing this?" We wanted to make a change in our lifestyles as far as corporate America goes. And so we taught each other, or I had been homebrewing, so I taught her how to homebrew. And we made the venture, and we asked around to a lot of people that were in the industry whether or not being a female would be a hindrance. And absolutely, we were given all the encouragement in the world, especially from folks that were working out at New Belgium, that being a female, you just needed to play like you knew beer, and you wouldn't have any issues.
And for you, how much of it was the beer making and how much of it was management? Because I understand it was sort of the business side of it that attracted you in the first
place. It was. We loved the beer. We enjoyed beer. And they always tell you, if you're going to make a successful business, you have to find your passion. And I had always wanted to own my own business, and Michelle had been wanting to do business as well. So the business skills that we had, both holding MBAs, led us to saying, we want to open a business, and we love the beer, so therefore, why not a brewery? And this was back in 2011. Not as many breweries out there as there is today. And we put forth the effort, made the business plan, and it all seemed to work out really well for us.
And where's the brewery?
The brewery is located in Holly Springs.
Yeah. And right now, and you've been up and running less than a year, and you're in 80 pubs and bars in the area?
That is correct. And we're growing 4 to 5 a week.
Well, Kevin, you're a white man with a beard.
I am.
And therefore, you fit the profile. You've been in Wilmington now. When you first got there, 8 years ago, you were the only game in town,
yeah,
right?
Much.
Just
we're
about
the only game in town, and
it's been lonely down there, you know.
But, well, apparently you did something right because you've attracted some attention and some competition, I guess.
Yeah, we have a couple other breweries opening up and more on the way, and I think it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing because beer tourism is a real thing, and the more people that come to Wilmington, they're going to hit every bar. They're going to hit Front Street. They're going to hit Flytrap, Wilmington Brewing, Broomtail, Good Hops. So it's just great for the whole town as a whole.
So that part has changed just since you've been there, hasn't it? The fact that this tourism part of the fact that, as Margo was talking about, people want to come and see where it's made and do the
absolutely.
Tour.
Yeah.
And just since you've been there, that's changed. How does it change your business at all?
It hasn't changed our business at all because we're just a fully functioning restaurant, so we're making the beer right there, and we're one of the only ones right now that has a restaurant attached to it, so that helps us out in the long run. But we haven't done anything different. We're just still pumping out beer, making a ton of it, and doing good things.
How did you get into this business?
The story goes that I got my degree in political science, and it drove me to drink. but I did. I graduated college, and I moved to D.C., because my sister was living there, and I figured if I ran out of money, she'd let me borrow $20. And I was waiting tables at a brew pub, and I've always liked good beer, and hopped over to the brewing side, and I was cleaning kegs for little to no money, and I thought, this is great. This is where I want to be. I'm sweaty, I'm dirty, I'm wet. I get to listen to whatever music I want. And called up mom and dad and told them no more law school, and mom was a little sad.
Oh, wow. Wow. Did you record that conversation?
Mom was a little sad, and dad was, he said, yeah, you go do that and just bring me beer every time you
well,
come
there
home.
You go. And dad's got it. Yeah, you know, you think about it, Sebastian, of all the ideas that come up over a bar after about the third or fourth beer, business ventures that you say we got to get into this business. It's funny that more people didn't stop and think, we need to open a brewery. Right, that's got to
be
the first
thing. Yeah, it's true. It's true.
But let me ask you something about this—the ecosystem too—that you're going to create in Rocky Mount or hope to, because we talked earlier briefly about hops and barley, and then there's malting the barley. I mean, does this create opportunities? I guess to create an entire infrastructure or ecosystem for beer making. It's not just manufacturing the beer, but growing the hops and growing the barley. Is that possible in North Carolina?
Yeah, it's to some extent it is. So the barley side and malting is the one that's already been done on a small scale. And one of the things that I'll be doing in Rocky Mount, we're establishing a malting facility there, and it that's going to, you know, be using grain right from around Rocky Mount, essentially, since it's such a farming based community out there. And and the hops, it's the same thing. It's certainly possible. That is a little bit more challenging, but it's tried all over the state. NC State is running research with it, and it's just be a matter of time.
You are German from the land of beer. They have somehow marketed the idea that they are the beer makers of the world. But how, and certainly they've gotten a reputation for that. How is it different here than that to compared over there?
Well, I mean, it is really very different. So when I grew up, started doing this right out of high school, you know, when over here there's not even drinking age yet. And, you know, so you will grow up with beer. It's part of the culture. And so undergoing my training and my education, the brewery that I learned, whenever something was wrong with the beer, the mayor would come and check in, you know, and say, wow, what's going on, you know, that kind of thing. And so it was really part of the fabric of the town. And if it didn't go well, it meant the town was not doing well somehow, direct relation. Coming over here then, when I came over in 2005, this was before everything had really started happening, really early on. I already got intrigued by, like, being, there's no traditions in a good way. You know, there just isn't any of this. You know, and people, you know, nobody asks you what kind of beer you make. You could make a Belgian beer in Germany, or probably vice versa. I mean, it would just be,
or a sweet potato beer, I'm guessing.
Right. Yeah, that's certainly true. but yeah, so that's it's like a world of difference, and it certainly unleashes creativity in a way that I would have not been able to do in Germany, and it's part of the reason why I guess
I'm guessing now mayors all across the city, all across North Carolina, have now found the excuse they've been looking for.
Exactly.
No, I'm not
it's
drinking. Something. I'm just checking on the beer.
Right.
It's part of our economic development plan.
That's right.
I'll have another. I'm going to start with you, but I'm going to ask Margo the same thing. As a brewmaster, does it matter where the hops or the barley are grown? Is it like grapes in a way? Any of those products?
To some extent, yes. I mean, there are certain characteristics. It's all process-based. So a lot of it has to do with not just where the raw material comes from, but also how it's handled in the various stages. you know, from malting to or drying or kilning the hops and packaging, and then how it arrives at the brewer and what he does with it, and he or she. And so, you know, so that's, but in the end, there is some kind of, you know, terroir that you would get along with it. And that's certainly something that we're trying to do out at the brew mill to really.
Is that something, Margot, then you talked about the tourism industry. I mean, can you brand North Carolina hops the same way you can brand, you know, sort of Burgundy grapes and that sort of thing?
I think, you know, to an extent you can. And I think more than it being a marketing ploy, our breweries are just really interested in supporting their communities. They are not buying local hops and barley because they can market it. They're buying it because they want to support their farmers who are their neighbors, you know. And if that resonates with the consumer, all the better. But I think you'll find that breweries in every community across the state are contributing to the economy. They're providing jobs. They are good neighbors. They are very philanthropic, extremely collaborative, just nice people. And that's just part of their attitude is, you know, if we want people to buy our local beer, then we're going to support the local businesses that are surrounding us, too.
And you've been, Ellen, you have a brew pub. Tell us how that business, I mean, because that's different than brewing beer. How is that different for you? Is it more challenging for you to have kind of two businesses going on?
Well, we have obviously the production brewery, and then we have a tasting room. So we actually don't have a kitchen on site. We use food trucks to serve our customers in the tap room. It is two different entities. You know, production is production, and doing a customer service facing event with the tap room and getting people in to the tasting room. We're also always having to constantly change what we're doing in that tasting room because we're drawing from the local business community, the local housing community, and, you know, we're always having to keep it fresh. So it's definitely a challenge. But it's a lot of fun because we're able to do a lot of things that bigger corporations can't do, such as sponsor run clubs that run out of the brewery. So there's a lot of community involvement with our facility.
What about the cooperative spirit, Kevin? You talked about being the only game in town and saying you were lonely. You seem to have, even talking to you earlier, welcome the expansion of this, not seeing it as competition, but kind of like expanding the market for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, one of the biggest reasons is it gives me somewhere to go and have a beer that's not at my brewery, which is going to be nice. But yeah, it's great. And, you know, I've talked with most of the brewers in town, and we're going to start doing some collaborations here pretty soon and working together. And it's just, the more people it can bring to Wilmington, you know, we were the only game in town for so long that now people may look at Wilmington and say, hey, they got 4, 5, 6, 7 breweries. Let's go to Wilmington and drink beer. And they're going to hit every spot when they're down there, which is just great for everybody.
Sebastian, what, you know, if you're doing this as a business prospect, you buy up an old mill, you decide to put in this, it's a fairly large capital investment. Is this being done anywhere else? And you know, why did your backers think this would be a good idea?
So as far as we know, this is not done anywhere else. So this is sort of a new potential, a new opportunity that is brought to the industry. And I mean, the reason why capital is pursuing this is really that you know, Rocky Mount as a town has had fairly successful small redevelopment chunks with the Imperial Center or the, you know, the new train station and things, but overall there is a need to bring in a community that can thrive on its own and really has a collaborative spirit, and that's what the craft brewers are. I mean, they're sharing the good and the bad, and you know, from recipes to pricing to all kinds of things that other industries would never talk about, and that's part of the, I think, the success of them together, you know, and in turn, this will, them all co-locating in this particular instance, will hopefully, you know, over time create a real momentum to redevelop the overall site.
In a sense, it sounds like you're creating a new model because, again, going back to your experience in Germany where there are certain kinds of beers and ways to do it, a sense of restriction that you felt there, the idea that you would perhaps share a few trade secrets, that there's actually more to be gained in collaboration than with this kind of fierce, sort of narrow-minded competition. It sounds like a whole new model and a whole new way toward economic development, but also beer making.
Yeah, and we think that, I mean, the response that we've gotten so far is exactly this. Nobody seems to mind that they are co-locating it. Everybody seems to think this is a strength, and because everybody in the end runs their own business and they have their own stories and their own background and the way they came into starting this brewery, and that separates everybody already. And then on the other hand, everybody in stands coming together, all kinds of pieces of equipment from the mill, you know, to the heating system, all these things can be built and set up in an efficient way. And then having a, you know, strong partner on the whole development side, you don't have to worry about permitting, you know, you don't have to worry about the contractors, you know, all these things that you also fight when you're about to start your business, you know. So we're trying to just kind of bring all this to the table and make it a smooth, you know, growth pattern ultimately for everybody. And some will not make it, some will do really well, and they'll graduate from campus and stay in Rocky Mount or continue on somewhere else, and we'll see.
We're talking about craft brewing in North Carolina today on The State of Things. Margo, do you, you know, we're talking about this industry in North Carolina and growing it. It's fascinating to me because even in my short lifetime, brewing really was a kind of a regional industry. We didn't have just three national brands that we had to choose from. Everybody, you know, wherever you went, had their local brands, and then those big brands kind of took over. And now we're going back, but kind of in a different way. Is this a return to what we had? I mean, how is it the same and how is it different from...
That's a great point. We are almost back to the number of breweries we had in the late 19th century. So we're gaining on 3,000 breweries in this country, and that's how it used to be. It was a point of local pride when you had a brewery in your area. Now, granted, it's also very different because we're talking about unbridled creativity and just this wild spirit of innovation and collaboration that never existed before. You know, beer was beer back then. It all pretty much tasted the same. There were a variety of styles. We joke with Sebastian that, you know, Sebastian always just wants a good Pilsner. You know, it's hard to find these days because everybody is really pushing those boundaries. And, I mean, you're seeing this in craft brewing across this country, but in particular in North Carolina, I've seen some of the most creative concepts. And a lot of the time, it's cross-pollination. You know, it's Kevin talking to somebody in Charlotte, and they have this idea, probably after having one or two beers. Yeah. And it is a new frontier, but it's also a return to this local pride about, you know, your neighborhood brewery.
Well, and those local economies were thriving. I mean, I think one of the things that we forget about is that when we had local economic infrastructure where people weren't depending on multinational corporations for both their low-paying jobs and also for the flow of capital, they were doing pretty well with those local and regional industries within their regions. So a return to that, particularly with a more collaborative spirit, and then you add sweet potatoes and bacon to your beer, hey, how can you go wrong? I don't have time to say this, but I guess one of the things that we could talk about is the fact that even when some of those ideas, as wacky as they are, collapse, it does lead to, you know, sort of more thought and more creativity. So if the particular combination that you had only lasts for one particular run of beer, it might lead to other big ideas.
Exactly. And it's okay. You know, we're not afraid to take risks and make a mistake every once in a while because sometimes you end up with something kind of magical.
It is all very good. Great to talk with you. Margo Knight-Metzger, Executive Director of the North Carolina Craft Brewers Guild. Sebastian Wolfram is head brewmaster at the forthcoming Rocky Mount Brew Mill. Ellen Joyner, co-owner of North Carolina's first and only female-owned microbrewery. And Kevin Kozak, award-winning brewer from Wilmington's Front Street Brewery. Thank all of you for being on the program. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Frank.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things. You can find out more information at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Alex Curley is the intern. Robin Copley is our technical director. Our news director is Brent Wolf. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.